Are you ready, Dave?
Thanks, Dave.
Thank you.
Just wonderful, that big band music show from 2008, 2008 Best, that was put together by Big Band Bill himself for your listening entertainment one more time today. It's WHFR Dearborn. You're listening to the station from Henry Ford Community College, all volunteer, non-commercial, independent, WHFR.FM, the station making waves. And now our public affairs show for the week, we call it the new WHFR Journal. This is the new WHFR Journal for Friday, and it is January the 23rd, 2009. Welcome to the new year again. It never gets old saying that, because we're always hoping for new things, and especially here on the new WHFR Journal. It's not the same show as last week, folks, so glad that you tuned in. In the studio with me is my co-host for today, Ned Apigian. Welcome, Ned.
Thank you.
I understand you have a story, and I'm going to do a little story. Maybe it's a good segue about the Detroit Auto Show. You actually were able to get down there this week, as well as myself, on a different day.
Right. You mentioned that we were going to do it today, and my original plan was to go on Friday, enjoy the whole day, and take it easy. But
yeah,
then I realized I better go on Thursday night.
Yeah, well, he had to rise to the occasion. Folks, we try to share all the excitement and fame and glory of the WHFR Journal by rotating co-hosts here. And our news director, Susan Morrell, was not able to get back in this Friday. And that's it's a wonderful thing for her. She found a part-time job, and they're not going to be able to reschedule her hours until maybe next week or so. But whenever anybody can find a job in this climate, I understand across the United States, unemployment is now above 10%. This is not just Michigan. Usually that's a story in Michigan.
That's higher than Michigan now. Yeah. Isn't Michigan 7?
It's got to be higher than that. And of course, these numbers, these official numbers, don't reflect the people that have given up looking for a job, too. And they're not up to date to the minute, you know, a couple of months back too, but, it's really terrible. And so we wish her well, and she'll be returning, we expect, next week.
She's going to do her pet show, she told me.
Yes. And Pet Lovers Lane, the forum show that had been on last year on most every second Saturday of the month is going to be returning in February. She has a great guest lined up. And, my understanding is, if that works out, and you never know until the show is in the can, as they say, already recorded, it's going to be talking about presidential pets. So she has a woman that she's interviewing in Washington, D.C. that's actually in charge of, get this, the National Presidential Pet Museum. Yeah, That's true. And I just hope that it's not full of...
Waxed.
I hope it's waxed rather than stuffed former pets of our presidents. I'm sure it's not that. That would be tacky, to say the least. But she has a lot of knowledge about presidential pets over the years and how they've been treated, probably. And so we're looking forward to the return of Pet Lovers Lane on the second Saturday in February.
There's
from 10 to 11 o'clock. Now, just we're segue here. You know, we got to stay with transition, Ed. Your show for January, Then and Now, is returning tomorrow.
The 24th, right.
That's right.
Actually, I called my host and told him to listen to it on the internet since he's a professor at Bentley College in Massachusetts.
And even if he is too busy tomorrow from 10 to 11 a.m., he can always get it as a podcast archived on our website, whfr.fm. So remember, folks, you want to listen to our always rotating different kinds of shows, talk format shows, information shows that we do a little differently than anyone else here in this Detroit area, certainly. You can always go to our website, whfr.fm, click on the forum button, and look for the right date, because it's just indicated by date for the show. So
I was just going to ask, why don't we tell the people how to do it?
Right. And your show will, therefore, after tomorrow, after 10 to 11 a.m., will be available from the website as the show for January 24th.
What date did all that start, Jay? Do you remember?
The archiving?
Yeah.
For forum, my show is archived. About 2 years ago. So that, and they haven't erased too many of those. Some I wish they would erase. But anyway, most of those shows are still there, and the forum shows at least, I think, 6 months.
It's been that long.
Maybe since September that we had a button and we had the archive for the forum shows. It was overdue.
I wasn't aware of that.
I apologize to you folks if it was that recent, because I was the one that set it up. But we have it there now, and people can find all of the forum shows from Saturdays by date. We don't have it listed there by topic yet.
So now we got to keep those dates in mind.
That's right. So anyway, back to business here. You were at the auto show unfortunately, had a sort of a personal injury there. We don't need to go into that unless it was the fault of the auto show.
Actually, it's too much, too long, too long
good.
On your feet.
Good. Okay. Well, then let me talk about it. I'm go on a little blab here, and you can look at the papers, because we got a couple big stories in Dearborn that we want to talk about today.
The city Burton Katzman deal?
Yeah, especially that. So you can review that and maybe summarize that for our friends after I tell you here. I went down to the North American International Auto Show, which I just like to call the Detroit Auto Show, because by golly, folks, the auto capital of the world, at least it used to be anyway, and proud of the auto industries that are still in Michigan, even if the big three, so-called, are really international car companies, which aren't doing so well. I mean, Ford, Chrysler, and GM sell their product internationally. They're not just U.S. car companies in the sense of the market. And in fact, they build a lot of their cars in foreign countries. And some of them even come back here and we buy them and we think that they're made in the U.S. and they're not. But let's not go into that right now. I still call it the Detroit Auto Show, and I will for the next couple moments here. I thought it was quite sad compared to the spectacle of the past, which maybe were outrageous excess, you know, I mean, movie stars and flashing lights and amazing displays with running water where there is no water. And, you know, so this was just really like no frills, folks. I mean, it was just like a very big car showroom. The only sort of exaggerated display was from the BMW Mini Cooper. BMW owns Mini Cooper, a little small car made in, where is it made now? England, I guess. It was made there and still made there. Yeah. And although the design has been modernized and the quality has been improved by BMW over the car it was when it was made back in the 60s by the British car company, MG, I think, made the Mini Cooper originally. Yeah, well, don't worry about it, Ned. He's thinking back.
I think it was a little the Austin Hill Company.
The Austin, well, it was Austin MG. They sort of merged, and I can't remember who exactly introduced the the Mini. I think it was called the Morris Mini, in fact, when it first came out. So Austin, yes. Morris, and then MG, and then whatever. But cute little car. And what they had was, just to describe the only spectacular exhibit that I saw there, is that when they introduced their new Mini Cooper convertible, little teeny small car convertible going for about $25,000, $28,000 now, which is not real cheap for a little teeny convertible car. But when they introduced that new model, it's a new design for a convertible they already had, they drove it through a wall of like ice cubes, like large size igloo ice cubes that were made out of plastic, but they looked like large size cubes of ice, big blocks of ice. So it was like a wall that might be thought to be part of an igloo construction or something. And so they smashed through that during the preview week a couple weeks ago for the news reporters. And, of course, all the cubes fell down. But, yeah, and, of course, they left the cube sort of in place and the car sitting out there along with the rest of their display. So no big deal. But Chrysler Corporation is more known for smashing Jeep cars through walls of something, you know, to introduce them. But there's no extravagance. It was just the car sitting there, and you looked, and a couple of the expensive ones you couldn't touch. But nonetheless, so no frills. And certain large car companies weren't there. Of course, all the big three were there, but Nissan, which is certainly a large car company and one of the largest selling groups of kinds of cars in the Detroit area even, did not choose to go to the show. I guess they felt they couldn't up their sales any, since they're already doing pretty well in the Detroit area, since they have a lot of small cars. And you know, economic times being what they are, that the Detroit market is actually a very good market for Nissan right now, as it turns out. So they just weren't there. They just decided not to go there. So there, Nissan.
Infiniti was there. That's their brand.
Right. That's their luxury brand, because maybe that's not selling as well, or they knew that the Lexus, which is the luxury brand of Toyota, would be there. And so for whatever reasons, they did have Infiniti there. Yeah. Okay. Of course, why do you go to an auto show? Usually, in the past, it was always, well, which car is going to be my next car to buy? So it's like one big showroom. You just go one place, and you can sit and touch and read the brochures. And in the past, it was just issues of style and performance and what's the cost to buy it. These days, of course, it's more the cost to operate, the cost to the environment even, and maybe even that your purchase would somehow help support the U.S. economy and U.S. workers. So that's a place that you could go to find out these things. In some cases, you know, whether it's made in the U.S. or whether or not it's made in a plant in the U.S., a foreign car made in the U.S. by U.S. workers, wasn't that apparent. I mean, it wasn't that obvious from just walking around, but nonetheless, these are all issues. In fact, I think these days it's a question of whether or not you will buy a new car. Now, number one, you may not have any money to do so, but maybe what you got is good enough. You don't want to waste your money. That would be bad for the environment if you're broke and you know, and so on. And so there's a lot of questions, but I think it's good to go and see what the U.S. car manufacturers, at least since we live in Detroit, what are they coming up with? And of course, what's the best equipment and technology that is out there, even if you can't afford it? For full disclosure here, and very few journalists tell you their biases or what could influence their decisions, you know, conflict of interest. I happen to own a 2008 four-door car that was made in Germany by German workers. Okay, just so you know. It happens to have superior handling and performance, really, and it is top-rated, best-in-class by all major U.S. auto magazines, all major auto magazines in the world. And so in terms of, I chose something that was very, very good in terms of performance and handling and safety, blah, 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 but it is made in Germany. It happens to be a four-wheel drive car, or all-wheel drive, if you want to put it that way. And I think that's extremely safe, and I'd recommend it to anybody. It doesn't cost that much, even on some U.S. cars, that they have models that you can choose either, you know, standard drive, either front or rear-wheel drive, or all-wheel drive. And my car, on the highway, gets 30 miles to a gallon. So you can't say I'm not trying to save on the use of gasoline. Okay, the original sales price, by the way, although I lease it right now, but if I had to buy it, it was $34,000. Okay, not exactly, you know, a super luxury car. I got the bottom of a foreign car manufacturer's line, not the top. And my lease ends in December 2010, so I'm not in the market right now to buy a new car. I'll probably wait until the lease expires in 2 years, well, actually a year and a half from now. and then I'll figure out what's going on. And I should, for full disclosure, I should indicate that I own stock now in Ford Motor Company. Yeah. So if Ford does well, I will do well. So if I mention any Ford cars here, and I will, that I think are good, you could say, well, he just wants to make more profit on his stock. Now, I got
about 4 years, maybe.
Well, yeah. I have to admit, though, I mean, you say, whoa, he's a stockholder in Ford. What a big hot shot. It's 5 shares, folks. At $2.20, I think I bought it a share. So it's only like $15 purchase.
When?
Okay. I bought it in December.
Oh.
It's like $2.30 a share, $2.30. So it's, don't say I'm a big shareholder. I just thought I'd help support Ford, and I don't have money to waste. I'm a retired person. And so just, but it's something. Hey, if Ford does well, I'll get maybe 20 cents profit on a share or something. Who knows? So anyway, I'm just full disclosure, and here we go. Here's what you didn't really want to hear, but here's my conclusions. And I had to put it in categories, too. All electric cars, they're not quite here yet, of course, for the highway. All electric, no just batteries, okay, that you charge up from an outlet somewhere. But in a couple of years, 2010 to 2012, some really interesting choices that should be there. Okay, Mini Cooper has an all-electric car. But, you know, normally the Mini Cooper, although very small, is a four-seat car. Well, the Mini Cooper electric needs so much space for batteries, you don't have a back seat. So it's become a two-seat electric car. The Smart car, which actually is made by Mercedes-Benz in Europe and is now marketed by itself, not in a Mercedes dealership, and there's a Smart Bloomfield Hills dealership right now. It's just north of Bloomfield Hills, what I think of anyway. But it is out there, and they're selling the gasoline-powered version Smart right now. It's a two-seater only, and it does get about 40-some miles to a gallon, and it's $15,000 or so, okay? But it has an all-electric version that is going to be available in about 2010. They're buying the technology from Tesla Motors in California, who have $110,000 all-electric sports car for sale now. But we won't talk about those really expensive electric cars because most of us here in Dearborn can't afford those. But Smart...
But that was at the auto show?
Yeah.
I
had to look for it. I was hunting for these things. I had a list. And Smart Electric was on display. It looks the same as the other Smart cars, but it has batteries and drivetrain from Tesla, which is good. It helps support the U.S. electric industry. And Tesla's already out there with an all-electric car. It's just more than what we can afford. Of course, Chrysler Corporation, they did show their all-electric, or was it a hybrid, Jeep Patriot, and their all-electric sports car, which is called the Dodge Circuit, which are not in production now. Ford has taken the leap, and they announced in December, and they showed at the auto show, all-electric versions of a couple Ford models that might be out there in 2010 to 2012, probably 2012 for Ford. That's great if you don't have to go more than, say, 100 miles in a day before you need another charge. So if your commute is less than 30 or 40 miles each way, an all-electric car in a couple years shouldn't be too bad. But the price of these cars is going to be as much or more, probably more than gasoline-powered cars. Hybrids. Okay, excuse me. Get so excited here. Hybrid has both an electric engine and a gasoline-powered engine, folks. And around town, if all you need is electric, that's going to be what's working or working primarily. And there's various systems for doing this. But the great thing to look for, folks, and it's coming this year and especially next year, are plug-in hybrids. Now, General Motors has their plug-in hybrid. It's called the Chevy Volt. At least I think it's plug-in. Okay,
yeah.
And Toyota Prius has their plug-in version of the Prius, which will be available soon. Not quite yet, but soon. When it becomes a plug-in hybrid, you should effectively get a gasoline mile per gallon of over 100. I mean, it's absolutely fantastic. 100 to 150 miles per gallon, if you especially just drive in the city. So in other words, it has a lot more batteries that will power the car all the time, and when the batteries run down, then the gasoline, and only then, will the gasoline motor start up. Whereas the Ford hybrid and the current Toyota hybrid, they use the electric engine to accelerate, And when they get to speed, it's just the gasoline, it's just the electric batteries that power you. So it's a combination of on and off with the gasoline motor. But the plug-in hybrids have more batteries, and they're all electric for the first 100 miles or so. And then when they run out of juice, if you will, then the gasoline engine will kick in to help both recharge the batteries and also to power the car further and beyond.
See, I didn't realize.
So that's why you
I didn't think they had a gasoline engine at all.
Yeah.
I thought
the plug-in hybrids. Hybrids means you have a gas and electric.
Right.
And the plug-in ones means you got more batteries for the electric, which totally power the car until they run out of power. And so they get effectively tremendous miles per gallon if you need to use gas at all, depending on your situation.
You know what nobody ever talks about with those?
Mm.
Okay, I buy one. What do I have to do in my house? Do I have to bring some sort of power cord special?
Good question, but no.
It's not just my 120 outlet that I could plug in.
If you have, it's a 110, but if you have a 110 outlet in your garage,
right,
all of these cars can use that. Now, some of them can be charged faster from a 220 outlet, which is what most people have for their washer and dryer, but they don't have one in their garage. So
you'd have to
call an electrician in to wire up your garage for a 220 if you wanted to charge it faster.
So they provide the plug that goes into the car.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
The other end has to be another special adapter. Yeah.
Some of these cars are so cute, like the Dodge Circuit. It had its plug under a gas cap. It looked like on the outside that this is where you put the gas in. In fact, it's where you plug the cord in instead. And it's so cute.
Okay.
But it all depends on which car and which model. The Tesla, I know, that $110,000 electric sports car made in California that's already on the market, it uses 220, but you can buy an option so that you can use 110 with it. Okay, so that built in, there's the converter from 110.
How long does it take for 220 to juice it up?
Usually only an hour or two at most.
Oh.
Yeah, it's very fast with 220. 110, depending on which model, which car we're talking about here, could take 6 hours or more. No more than overnight, you know, like a typical 8-hour overnight to charge it up on 110. So I happen to have, just because my house came, is why I had a 110. I have a 110 outlet in my garage, so it wouldn't be a problem to charge it up that way. So that's a couple of years away, folks, but maybe as early as 2010, 2012. I thought that the GM Volt, which they say is going to cost $45,000, I don't know if that's worth it, folks. I recommend, and here's my conflict of interest, the hybrid Ford Fusion in Milan, 2010 models, which will be available in just a couple months, and it's the hybrid version. There is a Ford Fusion and Milan model, you know, Mercury Milan, available now that's gasoline-powered.
How much is that?
They haven't found out. Probably only a couple thousand more, sort of like it'll be competing with the just a couple thousand dollars more than a Toyota Prius, which is the hybrid that most people have not been buying and the only one available for many years. Honda is competing with the car
Insight,
the Insight, which is not the same as their old Insight. It's a four-door sedan that looks like a Prius, but is going to come out $5,000 or $6,000 cheaper. But it is kind of a cheap-looking car from what the auto magazines have said inside. So if you really want to save and you want to buy a hybrid, the cheapest one is going to be the Honda Insight on the market. But the Ford Fusion Lion are great cars. The gasoline-powered version, they've made improvements since last year in the 2010 Fusion Milan, and the hybrid model, which is probably going to be a couple thousand more, are also getting great reviews from all the car industry. And, if you live in Dearborn, you want to buy U.S., I'd say look at that. Those hybrids will be available and much cheaper than the Chevy Volt at $40,000. Although that Volt is going to be a plug-in hybrid.
Right, General Motors doesn't have one now that's a hybrid.
Well, they have some of their big, like, Suburbans.
I know that.
No, they don't have a low-end hybrid, to my knowledge. I could be wrong. But now the Ford Escape is going to be a plug-in hybrid, too, in a couple of years, not right away. They showed a model down there with all the logos on the side, Ford Escape plug-in hybrid. They do have a Ford Escape hybrid, gas-powered hybrid right now. They've had that for a couple of years at about $28,000. But the problem is that it's got the same suspension and I know Ford disputes this, but Consumer Reports says it's unsafe. That Ford Escape and the Mercury Mariner suspension, in an extreme driving situation, will not hold the car on the road. It'll flip over. So Consumer Reports is still not recommending the Escape, whether it's the gas-powered or the hybrid. Oh. No, it has nothing to do with the hybrid issue. Right. But they've been recommending it constantly every year since Ford came out with it. It's not safe enough. The suspension design is not safe enough. That's their opinion. Now, no other car magazine has gotten their high horses and said it wasn't safe. And, of course, Ford says it's perfectly safe. Well, it's safe enough anyway. I would shy away from something that Consumer Reports says still has a safety problem in extreme circumstances. Because I always think, yeah, that'll be my fate on the highway. I'll be in an extreme circumstance. Just my fate, you know, one chance in a million or something, and then the car will flip over or something. So I hate to mention that as a Ford shareholder, but...
It is a little high, and it is a little narrow.
Yeah, of course, it's an SUV, so it's a little taller. But other SUVs that are equal height... they don't flip over. Ford put an extra $1,000, they built it into the price of the Ford Explorer, their big SUV, when they had that tip over problem that was reported. Ford blamed it on the car, the tire manufacturer, whoever they were, blamed it on Ford not telling people to inflate their tires enough. Whatever, Ford didn't take, you know,
John Stossel, whatever, what's that program?
He's an ABC reporter, ABC. Right, and he brought that up. But what Ford did, which they didn't publicize too much, was besides getting different tires on there and telling people to inflate them properly, is they put independent rear suspension in. Monstrous expense and cost for them in order to get beyond that point of saying they had a rollover problem. So with independent rear suspension, which Escape has, it's just not as good a design as what the Explorer has. Explorer does not have a rollover problem, unless, you know, you really, like you go over a cliff or something. But they have not updated their suspension on the Ford Escape, whether it's a hybrid or not. And so Consumer Reports still says there's a problem there. It's not a tire problem. It's a suspension problem. So nonetheless, you got some interesting choices as hybrids, and those plug-ins, whoa, will they save gas money if you can afford them in a couple of years? And Ford has got a couple things coming down the pike that maybe you can afford. You can afford. Isn't that a cute slogan? Anyway, I just thought of that. But the Volt is out there at about $40,000 to $45,000, so I don't know if a lot of people are going to go that way. Now, let's talk about the pretty gas-powered cars, okay? I love the new BMW Z4 hardtop convertible. It's a folding hardtop, but it's probably $45,000 to $50,000. I'll never be able to get to that. The Mini Cooper convertible for $28,000 is really cute. Pontiac has a coupe version of their Solstice two-seat sports car, which is just so beautiful. I don't know what it's going to cost.
I didn't see that.
Yeah. Oh, it's going to come out in a couple months. A couple months, it'll be out there. It's just a beautiful, slinky, and the top panel comes off over the passengers, so if you want the sun on you, you just take off the panel. And now the panel doesn't store in the trunk, though. The trunk's not big enough.
What happens to the rear glass? Is it like a Corvette comes back to the
point? It pops up. It pops up like you, in order to put a couple bags of groceries in there. The coupe has a glass a panel in the Solstice coupe that hinges up. Okay, so just the glass part hinges up, and then you can put in a couple of things. But you can't put the hard panel in there. So what you can order is a convertible bit of cloth, and that will fold up after you take it off and fit in the back so you can carry it with you in case it starts raining or something. So it's not perfect, but oh, it's beautiful looking. And, of course, I like two-seat sports cars, so the Mazda MX-5 Miata is still out there, and I still, and Ford,
well, that's what the
Ford owns money in that. And so the, yeah, but that's a, in they have a ragtop convertible, or they have a folding hardtop in the Miata line, too. That folds up and goes in the trunk.
Yeah, totally. Chrysler does, and Volvo did too, has been having it the last couple of years. I wonder how much more that is than a regular convertible.
Well, that Chrysler Sebring that has the folding hardtop is only a couple thousand more than the ragtop was, but usually they charge you a couple thousand extra, and in some cases you can't even get the cloth convertible top anymore, so...
I didn't ask, but the Volvo had a 5-cylinder engine, which is not logical to me. I didn't wonder if they still have it.
That seems to work pretty well. The Smart Car, which is on my list here, which I think is really cute, and they have sort of a, a folding, a cabriolet, they called it, a fold-back cloth top, if you want to get that model, so that the sun can come in, just sort of pushes back. And that's real cute for about $16,000, though. And let's see what I want to say about that. You just mentioned... Well, anyway, so the Smart is a gas-powered car and a cute convertible. But Lamborghinis, okay, if you can't afford a car, you can't afford a Lamborghini at $300,000-$400,000. But they had just some beautiful cars down there, and the only beautiful, sexy human models standing around them. They actually hired, in the old tradition of the glitzy North American Detroit Auto Show. They had sexy male and female models in sexy clothes standing around the Lamborghini. If you missed that, Ned, I'm sorry. It made a senior's heart and blood pump faster, at least a guy anyway.
I didn't notice it.
Well, that's Lamborghini. So thank you, Lamborghini.
No Ferrari.
I didn't see Ferrari.
There
wasn't down there, no. And not shown, but coming in the future, folks, is a small BMW. SUV called the X1, and that'll be here in 2010, I know, and BMW didn't bring their concept or their mock-up yet. They're still, final design touches are coming out, but that'll be in the around 32,000, so almost accessible for some people. Four-wheel drive, small BMW SUV. The challenge here, and it was down there, I don't know, Ned, did you see the Brilliant Autos? Brilliant Auto.
What is that?
It's a Chinese company, and they showed three all-electric models, as well as some gas-powered models.
I didn't.
And they were all shined up to be Brilliant, which is the name. The company is actually BYD, but for marketing, they were called Brilliant. Okay.
Don't say anything about China on them.
Well, they probably didn't want to mention that down there because they thought somebody might get mad here in Detroit and maybe throw some tomatoes at the cars or something. But it's got a $250 million investment from Warren Buffett, who's a U.S. financier. That his company, Berkshire Hathaway, has already invested $250 million in that company because they're already selling those cars in China. Now, I understand from the auto magazines that if you look closely, they're kind of cheaply made. But they look pretty. And they'll sell relatively inexpensively when they do start selling. They're not selling yet in the U.S., but they'll be here in a year or two. So the real challenge for us, because we know how cheap you can make things in China, is to compete with their models. We know how Korea can make very comparable cars. You were mentioning the
car
Hyundai Genesis.
There's the car of the year. Right? I drove that car, too.
I know you did.
It was priced right.
Mm-hmm. For a luxury, sporty type car with a lot of things, competing against BMWs and Lexus, right?
V8, $41,200.
So the so-called U.S. car manufacturers have some tough competition from overseas, especially with Hyundai, Kia from Korea, and of course the Japanese cars.
Are those two companies supposed to be the same, Kia and Hyundai?
No, they're two separate, different companies. And now, of course, the Chinese entering the market with the Brilliant line of cars, which will be here in a year or so. And all electric models coming real quick, because that's what they showed at the auto show, too. In various sizes, four-door sedan, smaller ones, bigger ones. And
two-door coupe, too, I remember saying. Mm-hmm,
yeah, so that's happening there. What I'm going to say, the auto magazines, and I didn't look closely at it because I didn't like the looks of it, but the auto magazines have been raving about the 2010 Taurus, which is a new design.
Saw it there.
And it's going to have, as an option, just like the Fusion, all-wheel drive. And get this, they've got
it. Does now.
It does now. But I'm just saying it's going to be available on a new Echo V6, Echo engine, 355 horsepower V6, which is actually very fuel efficient. And that's coming on the Ford 2010 Taurus. So, wow, that'll be a really something for, and that's something special.
Ford can get it in the Lincolns too.
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah,
Echo.
It's across the whole Ford Motor Company line. They're trying to make their engines more the same, no matter what you buy, whether it's a Ford or Mercury or whatever. Volkswagen did show a concept. I didn't see anything special there, except Volkswagen. And just mention this briefly. We got to move on with other stories here. Oh, we're already past the halfway point on our show. The Blue Sport is their concept car. It's a 2-seat sports car that might be made in a couple of years, and it has I think a hybrid or electric, but whatever it has powering it, it'll do up to 140 miles an hour. With the powertrain it has, and get 57 miles per gallon because this is what it is. It's a clean diesel. It's a clean diesel in this little sports car, a little teeny diesel engine in this little teeny two-seat VW sports car, and 57 miles per gallon. Now, diesel, right now, if you happen to have a diesel or thinking of, you've heard about clean diesels, and Volkswagen has a clean diesel in their Jetta right now, and will have a better model even next year. And BMW has some clean diesels in their 3 Series sedan, and their SUV X5 is a clean diesel. And they get very good gas economy, but we know diesel by gallon costs a little more now.
Now I think it does. Gallon, before it used to be cheaper.
Right, a gallon of diesel does cost, I think, about, well, let's say that the gas price is like
$2.
$2 or $2.10 now. Diesel, I think, is going for about $2.50 a gallon. So it's not too much more. But if you consider you get 40 to 50 to 60 miles to a gallon, it is a better deal. Now, the trouble is, though, and people point, that diesel models cost $3,000 or $4,000 more than the comparable gasoline-powered cars. So the clean diesel engines are more expensive. And will you make it back in 3 to 5 years of buying diesel? No, you won't. Even with the better gas economy, you won't. If it's any trade-off, though, in your head, they're better for the environment. They're cleaner in terms of their, you know, what comes out of their gas pipes, the exhaust, than gasoline-powered cars.
Diesels.
Right. These are very clean. They're better for the environment, even though you're not going to save money by buying a diesel at the outset. But along the way, maybe a little bit, you're saving a little more, but it doesn't make up for that extra $3,000, $4,000 cost you had to pay at the beginning. The best option would be, if you're thinking diesel options, is the Volkswagen Jetta diesel. That's still the lowest priced clean diesel that's on the market right now. And maybe you'd make back the difference there. Not the BMW diesels, because they add that extra $4,000 up front, and so you're not going to save there. But it is very clean, and diesel is a very good short-term option if other car manufacturers wanted to develop it. It's better than this, what do they call it, when they burn like the oil made from corn. Eco-fuel or whatever. That may sound good, folks, but to raise the corn takes more water and environmental cost up front then it's worthwhile, and you don't get better gas economy by buying it.
It's silly. The idea,
what did they call
the
it?
Switch, yeah. The switch grass is the solution, not to raise food and put it into a gas tank.
Well, especially corn, but that's been shown to
ethanol,
thank you, a disaster. Nobody should really take that route. But diesel is a good route, and they could really do small fuel-efficient diesels for a while. That would be a good transition to plug-in hybrids and electrics. But
the
we don't.
E85 cars,
that's it.
Those are ethanol, too.
They will take either gas or ethanol, which is the corn-based fuel, if you can find a dealership that has that. There's more diesel
dealers. It's one on Telegraph, Joy Road.
Yeah, there's more diesel dealers. In fact, in East Dearborn, the mobile station that I don't go to because I'm still boycotting Exxon Mobil, but they have diesel pump right there. So if you want to just pull in, I mean, it's very easy to find diesel now, relatively easy. I'd say a couple stations in Dearborn do have diesel pumps now. So not just for, you know, at truck stops. Okay, my last point is the Nissan has a great $30,000 sports car, $32,000. The 370Z, which is a new model. And just so the sports car people, look at that. But Ford Mustang GT, same price. You might want to look at that. Chevy Camaro was down at the auto show. I didn't get a chance to stare at it, but it's quite swoopy. Nothing fuel efficient about these cars, folks, but they're all in the same competition there. You know, Chevy Camaro coming out in a little while, all gas-powered and swoopy and sporty and all that. Okay, nice. End of that at the auto show. I'm going to give Ned some of my brochures here. So, oh, here's, see the plug-in Ford Escape? See that cute? Looks the same as all the other ones.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, there's another one from Myers Motors, and the guy wasn't at the desk, but this is in the basement of the auto show.
I didn't go down there.
All-electric car, and it's made in Ohio, which means could just as easily make it in Michigan. Myers Motors, it's Myers Motors, MOTORS.com if you want to look into it. Unfortunately, it's an all-electric car, costs $30,000, and only seats one person, and it only has three wheels, two in the front, one in the back. Yeah, it's real cute, though. Cute. They've had the same model for a couple of years. They've been selling this. It goes up to 76 miles per hour. boy, I'd be hanging on for dear life in this little sucker. But I'm sorry, can I say sucker on the air?
Yeah,
I think
sure
so. It's all electric. And it's very clean. It only will take you about a 50 or 60-mile range per charge, though. So its range is not much because it's not big enough to have many batteries in it. You can Ned's looking at the picture here
this
now.
This is a commuter car.
Right. Yeah. But 30,000?
You'd have to live in New York City or something.
Yeah. And it's very, very short range. But, boy, will it go fast if you had to. But it 76 miles an hour, you only get about 40 minutes and you're out of gas. I mean, you're out of juice, you know. So you're stuck somewhere if you go that fast. So you better watch how the batteries are discharging when you're going.
I don't drive my regular car that
going
fast.
That fast. But I think it's really cute for. But it's only one person. It only takes two bags of groceries in the back, and the charge only lasts for 50 miles. So got to be really, really close to where you're going. If you're going to be that close, why don't you ride a bicycle, folks? I know it's cold outside. All right, going to play some spots when we back, Ned and I, with the headlines from the Dearborn local area here on the new WHFR Journal. Yes.
Making waves.
Making
today.
Waves. Thank you. Very good. Yeah. Here we go. Take a listen to these things, and we'll be right back.
I deliver your Sunday paper every week.
7. We work on the same floor.
1 in 8 Americans is struggling with hunger.
6. Our kids walk to school together every day.
Including millions of children and seniors.
5. We chat in the elevator at work sometimes.
4. I'm your cashier at the grocery store.
Who's the 1 in 8 in your life that needs help? You can make a difference through Feeding America at feedingamerica.org/1in8. A public service announcement brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
A leader in education in your community, Henry Ford Community College has provided excellence and innovation in education since 1938. We're proud to have launched the careers of thousands of students both in Michigan and around the world. Celebrate the 70th anniversary of Henry Ford Community College by becoming a student today. Achieve your dreams, and it starts with a visit to hfcc.edu or by calling 1-800-585-HFCC. Henry Ford Community College, your best choice, guaranteed.
The Trade and Apprentice Education Division of the Henry Ford Community College is excited to present a new 10-credit-hour renewable energy certificate program. The content of the courses will be structured to inform the students of both present and future renewable energy concepts. This certificate program should interest students who are looking for an alternative to our current reliance on fossil fuels. To learn more about this program, please contact the Trade and Apprentice Education Division at 313-845-9609 or on the internet at www.hfcc.edu.
We are back with the new WHFR Journal for January 23rd, 2009. Ned Apigian with me. Ned wanted to mention, I cut him off or didn't let him talk, that Lincoln, which is, you know, I sort of put Lincoln
our
and
neighbors.
Ford together there. Our neighbors had a concept, or I thought it was a concept car, and he said it's coming to market soon, which just tell us 2 minutes about it.
210. It's coming
2010,
out.
Next year, okay.
Coming out. It's coming out as a 210 model, but I think it's coming out soon.
Right, yeah. They are introducing a whole bunch of these cars at Ford and other manufacturers that are 2010, but they're not waiting to the fall. So
yeah, it's a cross between a station wagon and an SUV. It's almost something like the Dodge Magnum.
Or you were saying it's a little bit like the Ford Flex, which is a big station
wagon. It's that kind of size.
Yeah,
but
yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's a luxury vehicle. The two seats in the back are just like front seats with a console.
Whoa.
Very posh, okay. Finished. And the other advantage is it's got two additional seats in as a third row, mm-hmm. which makes mm-hmm. it very useful.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's good to mention. We didn't mean to slight Lincoln. I know that's a... Some people said that Ford might get rid of Lincoln as a separate division and just call all the cars Fords or something to save money, but they are still trying to survive, and they have some things that are a little different than the Ford line still happening.
This was shown as a concept vehicle last year.
Oh,
and in one
okay.
year, they've made come into reality, and it yeah. will have that Echo engine that
right,
we were
the
talking
Eco
about.
V6, yeah. Eco
right.
V6, yeah.
And it was kind of attractive. I know if you need a car that big,
yeah, right.
There were a couple other interesting
Ford, things. We have to say Ford and GM and Chrysler, they're trying to be competitive. They've got things down at the auto show. I see Chrysler may have a buy-in from Fiat.
I wanted to talk about
We don't have time about that right now, but that may or may not happen. Some of the
but that'll save Chrysler. That's the important for Detroit.
Well, but some of the Republicans in Congress are saying we didn't vote bailout for Chrysler to become a foreign, you know, have a big stake in a foreign car manufacturer. So blah blah
did
blah.
Did you know Mercedes still has 20% of Chrysler? I didn't know that until I saw it in the paper.
Some of the Republican congressmen, reminds me of a phrase from a Republican vice president, Spiro Agnew, in the 60s, and luckily most people have forgotten him, but he referred to nattering nabobs of negativity.
Yes, I remember that.
Okay, and he was talking about some media people that were
right.
criticizing him, but I think these Republican legislators, in terms of Detroit, are nattering nabobs of negativity, and don't get me started about Fox News this week. I've got a worse term for them, but here's the big deal.
Why do you
headlines,
listen to
by accident, I'm a channel surfer. You know, I just there's Hannity. Oh my God, what is he saying now? Okay, city is suing Burton Katzman. This is great. We had a story we didn't do last week about didn't have time for that. I don't think I fully explained is that the council president. In Dearborn is thinking of not running again.
That is?
Tofelsky.
Tofelsky, right.
Yeah.
The guy that wanted to be
right.
mayor,
because,
too.
Right, because he said there's not enough new ideas. Things aren't moving ahead. He was against the developers and the rate of development in West Dearborn, and he felt nothing was happening. We were just stringing everybody along, and well, the city... Without announcing this, I don't think in the city council meeting, their legal department and Mary Landrosh, the director of public information, they just got their act together, and they're now suing Burton Katzman. So I'm sure Tom Tofelsky is very, very happy that something is finally being done. And listen to the charges against the developer here. I think they got a case all right, and maybe they get some money back or maybe get some things changed. Certainly, Burton Katzman was not living up to their side of the agreement as I see it and as the city sees it in this lawsuit. Breach of contract is the basic charge, that the company failed to construct a facility in the area between the two parking decks behind West Village Commons, located between Tenney Street and Howard Street. The land is said to be worth $1.5 million.
Is this off the tracks? Behind, so the track
it's
would...
nearer the tracks, yeah. Yeah, but it's between the two parking structures, which is the same place they had the farmer's market last fall and so on, and some other activities were there. Anyway, and also in the breach of contract portion of the suit, the city says the company failed to construct all the condo units in the West Village Square complex. Burton Katzman, Landros said, has constructed 36 condo units, while the contract specifically calls for 48. Now, they could say, oh, it's bad business time, but they... Contract says 48. They didn't do 48. Another portion of the suit is silent fraud. They kept it quiet. Silent fraud, as the city believes the company has designed. I've never heard of that phrase before, but don't do it, folks. Somebody says, hey, let's do silent fraud together. It's against the law, I guess, just like fraud. City believes the company has dissolved without alerting City of Dearborn officials. That the city, Burton Katzman, that company doesn't exist anymore.
Well, then there's nothing you could do, is there?
Well, I guess they can sue somebody because they sure are going to go ahead here. So we've been looking at this for more than a year, but some things have happened. We decided we'd continue to work with so-called Burton Katzman. They've had some talks with the developer, Ned Hakim, about a hotel, and then the student housing idea surfaced, but nothing got done. And Mayor O'Reilly here, quoted, said the $1.5 million price tag was put on the land to aid Burton Katzman's finances. Had the contract remained intact, the city would have to buy the land back from the company. But O'Reilly said the city is trying to recover the land as part of damages in the suit. And O'Reilly Monday said that copies of the suit were delivered to each of the defendants last Friday. That's a week ago now, folks. And he added that the breach of contract portion of the suit has been in the works for more than a year. And so I'm sure... Tom Tofelsky is extremely happy, as are a couple of other people on the council who said, we got to do something. We just can't keep giving these delays and extensions. And, of course, there's the Montgomery Ward land development project on the east side of town across from City Hall that is not moving forward very quickly either. City's not doing anything about that at
this point.
Nothing
is going to move forward quickly in this economic market.
Well, at least the city's doing something to get back the value and to maybe to force the company. But the company may not even exist anymore.
So who owns the land now?
Well, I don't. I'm
Did
not.
Did the city actually transact the land to them for nothing, and they're saying it was worth $1.5 million?
That's right. And in order
for
to help
dollar?
Them use it for, I think, to use it for some sort of collateral to raise
sure.
additional finances.
Right, right.
But now they want it back. And or
maybe.
The $1.5 million, you know, because they
or the dollar back.
Yeah, and I don't know how do you get money back from a company that maybe doesn't exist anymore, is dissolved without alerting city officials.
You sue the director.
Well, you sue everybody individually that was part of that company, I think, and they still exist. And
if they got director's insurance, then what?
I don't know, but good for the city. I mean, I'm on Tifolsky's side here. We had to do something, and of course, I'm on O'Reilly's side too, because he said let's do something. I mean, he obviously made this happen. Finally, he knew how upset not only Tifolsky but a couple others, but a lot of people in the council. Well, if the city or the mayor or legal are not doing anything, then I guess there's nothing to be done. And I can understand Tifolsky's upset is because there seem to be a lot of people that just sit there as city council members, and I'm not being specific, so I'm not pointing fingers, but they don't seem to want to move things along very quickly. Well, we got a problem. Well, we'll just ride it out. These days, you can't do that, folks. It's not business as usual anymore. And it does seem to me that almost every one of these major projects, it seems to me, I'm probably wrong, in East or West Dearborn, the city's been involved in, there's been developers who haven't lived up to their side of the bargain, and the city's had to threaten lawsuits or actually take lawsuits finally.
Well, it doesn't take a genius to set a timetable for people. They don't meet the timetable.
That's right.
Then the project is lost, and the property and the land returns back to the city.
But apparently,
and that's
not
how
without,
the kind of deal yeah. I would structure. So mm-hmm. they
yeah,
just
well,
not,
the city did in their contract. Now they're just saying,
what if another developer comes and he can't
they defaulted.
Do it?
We want our value back.
Right.
Yeah, and it's just totally fair. The city
but
should do that.
The suit is based on the fact that you had to bypass developer X and Y.
That too, sure.
Now, in this market, probably that hasn't happened. But...
Well, there was a couple other bidders, I think, at the outset. Not many. Burton Casson was almost alone in the ones that said they could do something here. They had a couple of the crazy ideas from some other bidders, I think, that never even got close to
so
being
So it depends
awarded.
On how they structured yeah. the thing. It's a lawyer's
well,
thing.
Speaking of new projects, though, in the city, you have that story there. Mayor O'Reilly last Tuesday, and he came here and talked to myself and our general manager, Susan McGraw, and operations manager, Laura Rousset, about a project the city is pushing forward that he'd already announced last Tuesday. And it was in the last Sunday's edition of the
Press and Guide
on page one. It started there, and then on 10A, we are mentioned, not just we, Henry Ford Community College, but WHFR. They got a green project for us that he's asking for funding from the federal government, and maybe it'll be Homeland Security, or maybe it'll be an Obama, you know, job creation program, which is what they're talking about there. But Ned, give us
who
a little summary.
Who knows whether the Congress is going to come up with the money he's talking about?
Well, it's part of that job stimulus package for the whole country.
Well, and, the paper mm-hmm. says cities plan for federal stimulus
money. Yes,
money,
yep.
Big dollar signs.
Yep.
As it concerns up there, also in Dearborn Heights, but mm-hmm. The yep. one in Dearborn to be part of a green initiative. Dearborn's Mayor O'Reilly on Tuesday morning unveiled a list of nearly 60 possible projects spanning a number of areas that could create several jobs.
Yep.
If the city were to receive a portion of the economic stimulus package discussed by the President, Barack Obama, O'Reilly on Tuesday was part of a group of three speakers who discussed the state and county's future as it relates to making an investment in clean energy. The press coverage sponsored by the Environmental Michigan featured O'Reilly Environmental Michigan environmental associate Shelley Vineyard, who works on clean energy and water issues at the state and federal levels, and the University of Michigan Dearborn Vice Chancellor for Government Relations, Ed Bagel.
Bagel. Yeah, I went to school with him at Oakland University, and
well,
we stayed in the same dorm. I didn't. not, I No relationship here, folks. And Ed probably doesn't remember me because he was a big man on campus, BMOC, and I was nobody. I was just a good student. He probably doesn't remember me. But he's a big man on a new campus, U of MD, and he's done a lot of good things over there. Some of the projects I've disputed, regrettably, some of his logic and some of his research, but he's brought a lot of good things to U of MD. And
what's his professional background?
Business.
Oh.
Yeah. And especially at educational institutions. I don't know about his career before he came to the U of MD. But, no, good that U of MD. We're all partners. We're all in this together, folks. We're all on the same planet. We need alternative energy. We need to move forward. And here's the news
about... Here's the part about that concerns us here at the station. Mm-hmm. One of those projects involves the city's emergency notification system. The city is working with HFCC radio station, that's us, WHFR-FM, to help them gather funds for a solar-powered roof that is independent of an energy source. If those funds are obtained and the roof is put to use, in the event of a power outage, of course, throughout the city, the college's radio station would notify residents of an emergency, O'Reilly said.
And
here we are.
Yeah, we're so happy to. In fact, I suggested this to Mayor O'Reilly last year in March, and the bug in the ear thing, and he liked it. And in fact, Mayor Guido had information director, public relations person who proposed the idea several years ago, took the initiative. This is about 5 or 6 years ago, but that didn't move ahead when that particular person left the city. But we were always doing what we can for the community with our volunteers. We'll go on the air. We're not paid to be here.
Where's our roof? Which roof do they want?
Right above your head, Ned.
Oh, but how about the new one we bought from the Society of Mechanical Engineers? Is that flatter or bigger? I don't know. This roof is not all that big.
Well, without getting into specifics, it looks like our project, we need some solar panels or solar and wind generation on the roof of the liberal arts building here on campus, which is where our transmitter tower is and our actual transmitter rack is, and that needs electricity. And to run a power line from over here to over there, it would be more expensive than the batteries for us. And plus, having a second unit means that we can be guaranteed of
broadcasting. We can power up the radio station.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, even if the studio power went down, we could take a little mini console up to the tower up there and sit next to the rack and broadcast if we had to. So we will get the message out in an emergency. It's very exciting. I think when the staff fully understands, I wasn't going to mention it to the press yet, but the mayor has already gone public, and it is that kind of thing. Everybody knows that there are little public address speakers on the phone poles all over Dearborn. That was a project cost $100,000. It was done about 10, 15 years ago. Nobody can ever understand an announcement that comes out of those things. It's all I mean, you can hear the siren when it goes off, but you can never hear what the words are. So we could be the voice of Dearborn in an emergency.
What does the siren tell you? It's lunchtime? It's 12
o'clock?
Well,
it's an emergency siren, and when it goes off, when it's not a test on the first Saturday of every month, you're supposed to tune to, you're supposed to go to
emergency.
The city's website. So you need an internet connection to get to the website to see what the emergency really is, because they can't tell you by the PA thing. So
they don't direct you to a radio station there.
You know, and you say, well, there's a lot of stations. They say that they were on the air in 2003 when the power grid went down in Detroit. And we were too, just because it was just a fluke that Henry Ford Community College had power when elsewhere in Dearborn they didn't have power. I didn't have power in my home in East Dearborn for 4 days. But the college had power restored rather quickly. But the point is, with this system, we will always have power. And in fact, this is going to be a green project in which we won't even have to use power when there is power for other people. That we will become totally energy independent of the grid and save the college a few bucks, but also be a test bed and an example for all the other businesses and homeowners where, with a little bit of upfront money, and that might be hard to get, but maybe the government can give a stimulus or something or a tax credit for it, all of us wouldn't need to pay much of a utility bill anymore 5, 10, 20 years down the line. We got to go for that. We got to use the renewable energy of solar and wind. And right now, the tech building here which has just introduced an alternative energy curriculum. I got 2 minutes left on the show here, Ned, so got to sum up. Brand new curriculum, folks, students, you can study this. You can learn how to be on the forefront of alternative energy right here at Henry Ford Community College. The program has been approved, and they have a solar wind generator for the tech building. It's already the bid has been awarded. They're already constructing it. It's going to be a demonstration over there and a test bed that the students can work on. And we're going to have, if we can get this money,
we're going to have one propeller or two or what?
I don't know the details, but I believe it's just one particular windmill to supplement on a day when it's cloudy. They'll still get power from wind if there is any wind.
And put it on
and if
the
there's
roof?
Not much sun, and I don't know where they're putting this. I just know that for us, probably solar panels alone would be all we'd need. We don't have much electrical needs really here. It's all transistorized stuff, you know, and Ned runs on his individual power cell, right, Ned? You charge up at before you come here. Just food. I'm talking about human power here from our volunteers is great, and the power for just a couple of lights and this microphone is very small, and our transmitter 200 watts. Okay, I mean, you know, very small amounts of electricity that we can store a battery power on sunny days, or at least cloudy bright days like today, and still have enough power to hold us for a power outage and be off the grid too. So we're proceeding ahead. Thank you, Mayor O'Reilly, for remembering my idea, or what may have been Mayor Guido's administration's idea. We want to move ahead. All of us need to move ahead. My last comment will be, if you're interested in alternative energy at the college, I'm going to move on with the theme song from the Highway 61 show coming right up right now with Joanne Korchinska, is that there'll be a special conference here. If you've got a Friday available, February 6th, Friday, starting at 8:30 in the morning and finishing at 1 p.m., which is great because I can go to it and then run over here to do our show and talk about it. But a lot of panels, a lot of discussions. I think it's free. I think it's open to the public. We'll tell you more. We'll have a spot on WHFR promoting it. Look for something in the paper.
And have somebody to interview from it, too.
Well, or I'll get some little segments that I can play back on my recorder for it. So a big alternative energy conference here, Henry Ford Community College Conference Center, on Friday morning, February the 6th, starting at 8:30 in the morning, with several different breakout sessions and keynote speakers and representatives from all different companies. And we'll tell you more about that, but that's another great way. If you've got the time that Friday morning, or can take off from work, or your part-time job starts in the afternoon, that you can get more information about alternative energy. And of course, if you're a student, think about the alternative energy curriculum, 2-year program here at Henry Ford Community College. Great new program starting in the fall here, and several of the classes are available right now, in fact, but the whole curriculum is going to be together and offered in the fall as a single program. Thanks, Ned, for being here today on the new WHFR Journal.
Always my pleasure.
Take care out there. And this is Jay Kornick saying, be careful, folks, with what you're doing. We're going to let you listen to our outro theme for a while before Highway 6.